The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour One Podcast.
And we welcome you into the middle of the week. And man, it's been a busy day already. Just when you thought COVID can't strike any more than it already has, it has gotten the Big Ten today. And that is certainly the big story this day. The Big Ten, which has only been back for a week, has already seen its first pause. And it could be serious. Wisconsin, in a very bad state right now for COVID, has canceled the big game this weekend with Nebraska. The West is up for grabs. They had been the favorite after their fantastic win the other night, and their quarterback is gone, and we will get right to that because that is certainly a story that many, many people are wondering about. Nicole Auerbach, who's covered the COVID crisis as ferociously as anyone in the country, joining us now. Nicole, thank you very much. Good afternoon, and it's really not a very pleasant day in the Big Ten. I'll just get out of the way and leave it to you to try to frame where we are right now.
Yeah, I just hopped off of Zoom with Barry Alvarez and Paul Chryst as they're kind of coming to grips with what's going on in their program, too. And it sounds like they're still trying to wrap their arms around it. Basically, it didn't get to the point where, like, the Big Ten's protocols automatically shut everything down for 7 days, but they were close. And Barry Alvarez said it was up to him and the chancellor to decide that because there had been 12 positive cases since their game on Friday, which is six staffers, and then that includes the head coach, Paul Chryst, that they just needed to take a seven-day pause and really get their arms around the cases and this outbreak and you know, again, continue testing. They're not done with all their testing. But really stop the spread and try to get it under control so that they can resume play at some point. You know, they didn't say anything about their Purdue game, which is scheduled for next week. But obviously with a seven-day pause, that would get you to Wednesday of next week. So that game is certainly in doubt as well. But for now, the Nebraska game is canceled, and all team-related activities are paused.
Nicole, I don't know. I wasn't on the call like you were, but, you know, there had been a lot of speculation that maybe that some of the testing had gone haywire, and then the quarterback Mertz had perhaps had the virus before the game. Has any of that been cleared up?
No, they were just saying that that there were the 12 positives, including six players, since the game. So, you know, as of now, we haven't heard anything coming out of Illinois, who was their opponent on Friday night, about any positive cases that came about from there. The incubation period of this virus is different depending on different people, right? So it's sometimes hard to pinpoint exactly where this starts. And obviously, as you know, Paul, these schools are, you know, hiding behind student privacy laws and various other things. So I don't know if we'll get, you know, a ton more clarity. Paul Chryst is careful really not to talk too much about, you know, how players were doing even in terms of, like, symptoms or non. So I don't know how much we're going to ultimately be able to clarify there, but you know, the good news is that, you know, Illinois is not reporting any positive cases after the game.
Nicole, I know you swim in these waters every day, but just let's remind our audience how different things are with the Big Ten. They shut down on August 11th. They came back, but they had more teeth in their protocols. How different is the Big Ten from most everyone else?
Yeah, I think ultimately these policies are somewhat similar, right? Like the idea is if there is an outbreak, you need to shut things down. You know, head coaches, it's the same protocols for everyone. It's CDC protocols, 10 days out with isolation. The differences really are kind of what triggers a shutdown. Like in the SEC and the Big 12 and some of these other leagues, you have certain numbers about like, okay, you need to have this many available offensive linemen. The Big Ten didn't set those types of standards. They set standards related to the positivity rate within the entire roster and then within their population of the team and the coaches and the trainers. So it essentially is like a color-coded system based on positivity rate. And that's where Barry Alvarez was explaining, like, they're in an orange-red situation, which in Big Ten parlance is you really got to monitor and keep close eye on things because red is an automatic shutdown. And they just decided with 12 new cases since Saturday, like, they were going to voluntarily have that 7-day shutdown. So that part is different. And then there's a 21-day shutdown for any players that test positive, which is longer than other leagues because, you know, it accounts for the time that it takes to do the cardiac testing and also, like, just that transition and conditioning, getting you back to play. And I will say that that's a little bit overblown because even if you talk to SEC coaches who've dealt with this, like, it's not 14 days or 10 days and then they're right back out on the field the next day because they still have to go through cardiac testing and conditioning too. But that number, the 21 days being like the absolute minimum, is more strict than anybody else.
Nicole, I realize we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but Wisconsin's a serious contender. Nebraska, maybe, maybe not, probably not. But what's going to happen when we get to the Big Ten championship game? This loss of game for Wisconsin, you know, could very well be critical. How do they figure it out?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think you know, you've obviously got to hit a threshold. I think it's 6 games to get through to be considered, you know, for a divisional champion. And then I would think it's like win percentage and then maybe record against divisional opponents, but that's definitely going to come into play here, potentially be an issue, especially, like, let's say Wisconsin and Purdue don't play, and then you have a 6-0 Wisconsin team, a 6-1 Purdue team, right? Like, it's very possible that this is going to get murky. And I do think this is something we could see in other leagues as we now get to the point in the season where there's not that many open dates to make up games, so you might have to cancel some games that could be otherwise important to a divisional race. But this is absolutely something to watch because, as you mentioned, I mean, Wisconsin's the team to beat usually in the West. And we just saw, like, they have a star redshirt freshman quarterback. He is one of the players who tested positive. So that 21-day period started on Saturday. So that is also something to monitor about his availability, even when the program, you know, kind of restarts at some point.
And finally, I know Paul Christ has tested positive, joining an unfortunately growing list of prominent head coaches. During the call, I seem to remember reading a minute ago that he talked about his mask wearing or maybe his not so good mask wearing. What do you remember if he in terms of his conversation about that, and could that have been a factor at all?
Yeah, I think they are evaluating you know, kind of all their different processes. He was also talking about you know, kind of the process they did for, like, a meal the night before the game. Like, there were to-go boxes, but there were also kind of spaced-out tables. Like, they're going to look at all those things because we learned from Notre Dame's outbreak, like, a team meal was a part of that. So I think they're going to piece, you know, together through all of those pieces. And Paul Chris is definitely, you know, thinking back and reflecting on the idea that, like, they've been preaching to these players, like, you know, be careful, take care of yourself. And, you know, he was someone who tested positive and is part of this outbreak himself. But yeah, he was talking about, you know, the mask causing his glasses to fog up and how yesterday even at practice he was trying to practice and work on that and get used to it so he could keep the mask up the whole time. But yeah, I think, you know, I think with any coach that kind of has gone through this himself, you know, you've got to think, okay, you're going to be really strict about these protocols coming out of it because you understand how quickly the virus can spread.
Nicole, thank you. The day we hoped we would not be talking about, at least not this early, has already happened in the Big Ten. All the best. Thanks for the time.
Yep, anytime, Paul.
Great stuff. Nicole Auerbach, who just has covered this thing so well. Again, I realize a lot of people are going, well, why is everyone making such a big deal about the Big Ten? Because they are the ones who decided not to play. Then they decided to play. And then they put in a very strict protocol. So it's a big deal. We will take a break. More to come. A lot to do on the program today. We will talk to many, many guests and your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We have only just begun. We hope you'll stick around.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, we welcome you back here, and let's get to the calls. And Anthony from Queens starts it off for us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Paul, just want to let you know that what you said this morning, I'm right on par with that. I'm located in New York, obviously, and I see what they're doing to these high school students, not allowing them to play, putting these fugazi 7-on-7 leagues going on and writing about them in the local paper. Like, it's like New York State Assembly wants to take helmets off these kids anyway. It's ridiculous. So I'm on point with you. Big Ten's got to stop being so conservative with it. The virus is, you know what, it's a dangerous virus. We obviously know that. However, the correct protocols are most likely being taken in these Big Ten areas. But I just see a lot of agenda.
Yeah, Anthony, all I said earlier today was, you know, and a lot of people have said, you know, don't you care about young people's health? Of course I do. I think everybody should be careful. I just think, you know, to try to make up for your inept and pathetic shutdown by adding a week to the protocol to make it look like you care more than everyone else is absurd. The CDC, like them or not, talks about a 10 to 14 day protocol depending on, you know, your symptoms. And, you know, why the Big Ten added a week, it really makes virtually no sense. And they also left themselves no room for error. And that's their own fault. They didn't have to shut down on August 11th. All they had to do was say, listen, we're going to take a break here for 2 or 3 weeks and get a grip on this. But they didn't. They had to try to, you know, be the smartest guys in the room.
Exactly. And that's my biggest issue here. It's, you know, I play college ball, and I can't imagine being in the shoes of these kids in the Big Ten. You know, not knowing what's going to go on here, not knowing, look, if I get a positive test, I'm asymptomatic, I take the proper precautions for a couple of days here, my whole season might be at risk. Well, that could screw professional careers up. That could screw people's draft boards up. I mean, at the end of the day, it just doesn't make sense.
Anthony, too, I asked Nicole, there's a chance that one of the players had it and, you know, maybe tested negative because they're using a different testing system, but you know, it also discourages transparency. If you know, listen, they're, you played ball. They're 18, 19, 20-year-olds. They're not concerned about this virus.
No, not at all. Not concerned about this virus. And then it's trickling down in these, you know, and in states like mine, unfortunately, with corruptive leadership where you don't got high school ball players playing a full schedule. You got them playing 7-on-7 ball. What's the incentive to go to school when I'm playing touch football? I mean, that's for the spring. That's not for the fall.
You're 100%
off the street.
You're right.
And you allow them to get recruited and get a scholarship for a free education.
Anthony, great to hear from you from Queens. Great little area right across from Manhattan. Andre is in the ATL. Hey, Andre.
Coach Paul Feinbaum. Thanks for taking my call, Coach.
You bet.
Coach, did I hear you say Bobby was going home?
Yes, unfortunately, he passed away a couple of months ago, back in the spring.
I used to love to hear the verbal judo between you and him.
he was a great man.
He was. God bless his soul, Coach. Listen, Coach, I heard you Monday, and someone called in about the status of Muschamp, and you were tongue-twisted because you love Will Muschamp, and you don't want to see him get ran out of South Carolina, Coach. I know it, and you know it. You are tongue-tied. It's amazing. This is the SEC. This is big money ball, Coach. And you feel sorry for these coaches. I don't want to see anybody lose their job. But, hell, look at the money they're going to walk away with in their pocket, Coach. But, anyway, that wasn't the reason I called. The reason I called was, man, hey, listen, we are Americans. We have to take this COVID thing serious. if we listen to the scientists. Forget these politicians. Listen to the scientists, the bookworm. They know what they're talking about. And if we all can come together as America, it doesn't matter if you're independent, you're Republican, you're a Democrat. If we can come together as a nation and do what the scientists advises us to do, I think we could come out the other end a lot stronger. Hey, thanks for taking my call, Coach Feinbaum.
Thank you, Andre, and I hope you're right about that. Eddie is up next. Eddie, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, Pogs. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Rodan Pod. I agree with Andre. You know, it just so happened that this pandemic has been politicized because we have no leadership. So I'm going to leave it at that. But hey, Paul, we was talking yesterday. Well, you guys were talking yesterday about Mississippi State and all the problems Mississippi State having down there with the players. Well, that comes too because of no leadership. They don't have a coach down there. I don't know why everybody thinks this guy is such a great coach. Tell me what he has done. All right, all the years he's been coaching, he hasn't won anything, but everybody keeps saying he's a great coach. Let me break this down, Paul Feinbaum. When you say a coach is great, all right, I'll tell you a great coach. A great coach is Nick Saban. A great coach is Dabo, all right? A good coach is the coach at Texas A&M, and a good coach is the one at LSU. I say good because they won a championship, Paul. Everybody else is okay, all right? They haven't won anything, so I hate when people overuse the word great and good. All right, and that Mississippi State coach, Paul, he can't be nothing but a politician. That's all he's going to be. Also, Paul, everybody is not a coach. Most is not a coach. He's a hell of a defensive coordinator, and the sooner he recognizes that, the better he'll be. And that's the same way with Mike Leach, Paul. He is a hell of an offensive coordinator. He's not a coach. And speaking about that, I can't wait till they come to Bama this weekend. I hope we hang 60 on them before halftime. Roll damn Tide.
Thank you. Big L is up next down in Louisiana. Hello, Big L.
Oh, young man, how's it going?
Man, it is going well. Thank you for asking.
Sure hope this finds you well. I got a question about LSU, but before I get to that, I watched Cat Daddy yesterday, and if you could tell him for me that Big L from South Louisiana would like to apologize for the crew and contempt nature that we treated the Gamecocks Saturday. You know.
I'll pass that along to Cat.
He had a little egg on his face. He was a little shook up.
He was. They weren't counting on that.
Coming over here. Sir?
They weren't expecting LSU to look like LSU.
Well, yeah, but listen, South Carolina didn't play that badly. You know? They had a pick six. They had the Mufaruski for 95 yards, and you know, they missed 3 field goals. You know, so the game was certainly closer than the 28 points. But if you see him, tell him I'm sorry.
I will. I'll make sure he knows that.
Yeah. Look, we got a storm coming over here now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel sorry for everybody down there. This is ridiculous. I mean, we are now in the final 2 or 3 days of October, and we're still dealing with this hurricane. I mean, it just needs to end, and I hopefully this will be it.
The good thing about it is it ain't going to Lake Charles.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That's the good thing about it. And listen, passing through all the storms here, certainly you can watch the weather report, but more so the severity of the storm, you watch the animals. And yesterday, the birds were on the way to the west. You know, and that's a good thing for us because that means the storms are over there on the east.
So the birds,
you watch what they
the birds were getting out of town before the storm. I like that. How do they know?
Yeah, I don't know how they know. The storm before, the one that hit in Creole,
right?
It was like 12 miles before us. Okay. I could tell it was a bad storm because the birds left 2 days before, and they were heading out north.
You know, Chris, those birds must get a different weather channel than we do.
They don't miss it. The crickets and the frogs too is dead silent. I mean, there's a quiet before the storm. You can't imagine. So I knew we were in for something. We got like 90 mile an hour winds here, and we were out of electricity for about a week. You know, just for that second to last. But, you know, the one that hit Lake Charles didn't affect us too much. We had some 60, 70 mile an hour winds. But
Well, Chris, you be safe down there tonight when that storm aims toward New Orleans. And I know that the path goes from Mississippi into Alabama and up into Tennessee and Carolina. So everybody be careful. Another storm heading our way. We will take a break. More to come. We'll talk to many, many guests along the way. And we'll also include your phone calls. Barrett Salee returns to the program, and we are eager to talk to him.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back here on a Wednesday afternoon. Barrett Salee joins us. It's always great to catch up with him to get his take on where we are as we're passing the midpoint of the regular college football season. Some leagues are just starting. Barrett, great to have you on. And how do you think it's gone so far?
I think it's gone as expected in relation to the COVID stuff. I mean, you saw all these conferences build in bye weeks that started earlier, and now the Big 12 or the Big 10, I should say, and the Pac-12 are sitting here, and they have a big problem because you cannot make these games up. You obviously can reschedule games and try to move some things around, but there's no way that you're going to have all the teams play eight games the way this has gone, and we could see that coming. But by and large, you know, you expected positive tests. You expected programs to have issues and come out on the other end and be all right. So I think anybody who tells you otherwise, I think is probably just trying to be an alarmist, because the reason these protocols were put in place were to limit the spread throughout a program and from program to program. And I thought, and I do think that they've done a relatively decent job of that.
Yeah, Barrett, let me get to the SEC here for a second. And you know, there have been so many bizarre comings and goings. How would you assess the SEC right now? And, you know, we know Alabama is out there, but after that, where would you go?
Honestly, I'd put Texas A&M at number two, because I think they've shown that they can play more complementary football. Kellen Mond looks great, but I think more importantly, Isaiah Spiller is one of the best running backs, not just in the SEC, but the entire country. And yeah, their defense has been shaky in terms of when you look at the statistics. You take the Alabama game out, they're giving up under 5 yards per play. That's about all you can ask from any defense in the SEC. So I think Texas A&M is a more complete football team. And I know folks will say, okay, we've been down this road before, and we have. But I wrote this on CBSSports.com today that you should really take out all of those other years. There are different situations that led to Texas A&M disappointing. This year, it looks like they've got the quarterback. The quarterback knows the system. But most importantly, they've got the running back. And because of that, I think Texas A&M is the real deal, at least in terms of being the top SEC team behind Alabama. Could it change? Sure. But in terms of this day and age of college football, you got to have the offense. They've got that, and I think they've got more than enough defense too.
Huge game this weekend. LSU goes to Auburn. I mean, the LSU conversation has been hashed out. It looks like it's getting better. Auburn, it's week to week. I know this is not a new subject for you, but assess the Auburn program right now under Gus Malzahn.
Well, I refer to Gus Malzahn as the world's best OK coach. He's good enough to have some moments where you're like, all right, this is going to work. Things are going to turn around. And then he has seasons like this where the offense, his offense, he wrote a book on offense, can't get going. And yeah, part of that's on the offensive line. We get that. But there's been no development from Bo Nix. And in my mind, there's actually been regression because in terms of an internal clock, he doesn't have one. I mean, he just doesn't have one. So, and then he throws up too many prayers. And had it not been for Seth Williams answering those prayers more times than not, they're probably a 1-4 football team right now. So to me, it's a disappointing year for Gus Malzahn. It's more of the same in terms of very little offensive identity. And I think all of us now looking at Auburn, we know what their offensive identity should be. And we did see that against Ole Miss. And I think that is important because you saw more zone read. You saw a ton of Tank Bigsby. And that's what this team is going to do well. But when put in a position where they have to throw, or at least they feel like they have to throw, will they abandon that? And I think Gus Malzahn and, more importantly, Chad Morris have shown that if there's just a little bit of panic, that they go to the passing game, especially because they trust Bo Nix for whatever reason. And Tank Bigsby is their guy. It should be all on Tank Bigsby. It should essentially be the Nick Marshall offense with the knowledge that Bo Nix is a little bit better of a passer, but not as good of a runner.
With Barrett Salee. Barrett, speaking of going the wrong way, Mississippi State looks like a mess. I don't know whether Mike Leach is just trying to clean it up or he is just sending the wrong message out. Where are you on Mississippi State right now?
Well, he said he wanted to clean house. He said he wanted to get rid of some of the people that were not doing well inside of the locker room, and apparently this is it. I mean, Terrell Shavers was there for what, 4 games? I mean, it's crazy. And Kylan Hill, look, Kylan Hill is a great player. He declared for the draft and he came back to play for Mike Leach. But I wonder, what did he expect? Because Mike Leach, in terms of how he operates his offense, running backs are always more a part of the passing game than the running game. And so, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to be a more complete player, okay, I get that to a point. But I think anybody that has watched Mike Leach knows that the running back's going to have more catches than they have carries. That's just the way things are. So, but it definitely does not bode well for Mike Leach. I think that if he has the notion that he's going to run off players and build his program from the ground up, I don't see how any recruit would look at that and say, that's a guy who I want to play for. Because if he's that quick to bail on his own players, the players that are, in Kylan Hill's case, no question, the best player on the team, if he's willing to bail on those guys, if I'm a recruit, I'm saying, why won't he bail on me? And I think that's a message that Mike Leach is sending, and it's not going to go over well.
Barrett, seems like I've asked you over the last 4 years countless questions about Will Muschamp, but the questions just don't ever seem to be going away. What's up with the Gamecocks?
Well, getting a win over Auburn is big, but I think you look at what he's done, and it's just the offensive consistency is not there. Now, I do think having a running game the way they do is certainly helpful. I just don't know if Colin Hill's the guy. I sort of question that move to begin with because Ryan Helinski, from all accounts, what we saw last year, is actually a really good player. But, I think when you're at a personnel disadvantage with the rest of your division, not the rest of your division, but the big boys in your division, you're going to have inconsistencies. So when you're at a personnel disadvantage and you go play LSU in Death Valley, guess what? Yeah, run the risk of getting smoked. And so I get people want to rail on Will Muschamp. I understand it. But what did anybody expect this year, right? Like, they're not going to contend for the East. I don't think anybody expected them to contend to the East. And they've shown that they can be competitive and have been competitive. So I just, considering the year and considering financially, we sort of don't know what the landscape's going to be. They can't fire him. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I don't even know if South Carolina fans should even be disappointed, because to me anyway, there's at least a sense of hope in some way, shape, or form that he can get this thing going.
Which brings me to Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt. I'll try not to ask the same question over and over again, but what's up with them?
You know, he's still learning. He's still learning. And I think when you're Tennessee, you signed up for a long rebuild. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So, you know, for what he did last year, getting his team to buy in and finishing the year strong. And then early this year, that's on Pruitt. That's on him. The players bought into him, and that's something that he should take pride in. And then the last few weeks, I get the frustration. Two of those losses are to Georgia and Alabama. I know the Kentucky game is not acceptable, but it's not like that you should win those games anyway. So I think you let it breathe a little bit. You let Will Muschamp try to gain back his team in the same way he did last year, and then assess at the end of the season, okay, is this going forward? Not to say he's going to fire him. They're not going to fire him, but is there momentum going forward? And I think there will be, because not only do they have really good young players on that roster, we talked about Tennessee's recruiting class all season, and it was up at the top. Now it's dropped back a little bit because it was more quantity than quality, but still, it's a solid class. I don't really think there should be any pressure on him. And if there is, then to me, it's sort of like you're a prisoner of the moment, because there's still a chance for him, and he showed it last year, to get this thing back on the track and finish the year strong.
It's next week, and certainly it will be the topic of conversation as we head to Jacksonville. But how do you differentiate right now Florida versus Georgia, both with a single loss, both with high expectations? Your thoughts on that rivalry and who ends up in Atlanta?
I think Florida still ends up in Atlanta. I think Florida is a matchup nightmare for Georgia, because Georgia's one-dimensional by necessity. It's a lot like the Les Miles teams from the last couple of years of his tenure there. They can't go score 30, 40, 50 points when they have to. And while their defense is great, I think we've all seen that. What do we know about college football over the last decade? Defense doesn't win championships. Just enough defense does. And that depends on what you are as a full team and who you're playing and matchups and all that other stuff. Well, if you're Florida and you're looking at Georgia saying, okay, yeah, the defense is great, but we've got Kyle Pitts. We've got Kyle Trask. We've got an offensive machine. They're going to dictate their style to Georgia. So in that case, can Georgia keep up? You heard from Kirby Smart earlier talk about Stetson Bennett being the guy. Well, can he go throw for throw with Kyle Trask? Can he go throw for throw with Florida's offense? No, he can't. So to me, yeah, look, I understand there's still a lot of folks that look at Georgia and say that defense is great. They're going to go to Atlanta. It's all about matchups. It's a matchup game. And Florida, like Alabama, is a bad matchup for Georgia.
Always great. Barrett Slee joining us, so we hope to have you back soon. Thank you, Barrett. Be safe with the storm heading your way.
Thanks, Paul.
You got it. We will take a break. A lot to chew on there. What did you think of Barrett's comments? Take your pick on any of the four or five topics. We are coming back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back, and always great to have you here. And David is up next in Florida. Hey, David.
Hey, good afternoon, Coach Feinbaum. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
I just love the interview with Carlos yesterday.
Thank you.
And I was immediately struck by what a ridiculous to the sublime moment that set up. As you remember, and I'm sure you can't forget, you had a chaotic, gibberish-filled noise from Jerome of Birmingham, and from there the show pivots to the eloquent brilliance of Carlos Alvarez. Truly the ridiculous to the
I had never talked to Carlos before. I mean, I knew his story like most people of our age group, but I was just struck by his – the poignancy, the style, the message. He was fantastic.
I was a student at Florida at that time. My freshman year, I saw Spurrier win the Heisman Trophy, and then 3 years later, got to see the Reese Alvarez show. So I got to see some good football there while I was getting educated. I remember 25 years after that game, I wrote a feature piece for my paper about that game, the 25-year anniversary. And what Carlos told me about it was that all he could think about was not getting caught from behind. He said, I never worried about dropping the ball or getting hit. My biggest fear was always getting caught from behind, which I imagine didn't happen too often. You mentioned Sullivan to Beasley, and, of course, that was a great tandem. And that 69 Florida team only lost one game, and that was at Auburn 38-12, and Reeves threw 9 interceptions. And I saw each and every one of them, and not surprisingly, that's still an NCAA record. But, you know, the magic of that 69 year, the super sauce, et cetera, was not – to be repeated. They had a coaching change, and Doug Dickey became the coach, and he wasn't thrilled with the passing game, and he wasn't thrilled with football being fun, which so he was in immediate conflict with a lot of the players on that team. Carlos recalled a team meeting that they had for the two black players on the team, only two black players on the team, to air some concerns that they had. And Dickey shows up and tells everybody, first thing he says is, the meeting's over, everybody go home. So they did not get off to a great start, and it ended up showing on the field. Just as an aside, you know, perhaps today's people obviously don't have a real good idea of just how great Alvarez was as a as a receiver. That his sophomore year, he had 1,329 receiving yards, which still ranks second all time in the SEC, and as does the average of 133 yards per game, which I believe remains the Gator record and second all time in the SEC. So, and as good as he was on the field, he's had an exemplary life.
Yeah, well, he really does. I hope people will get a chance to learn more about him. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Stanley is up next. Stanley, good afternoon.
How you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for asking.
I just had one question about Alabama and Nick Saban and his fault. From my understanding, he is still under quarantine, and I just want to know, how did Nick get cleared right before the game if his boss is still in quarantine for the COVID?
Well, it's pretty easy to answer that one. Saban, 2 weeks ago today, tested positive for COVID. They tested him again the next day. It was negative the subsequent next 2 days. So it was determined that he did not have it. It was a false positive. So he did not have to stay in quarantine other than the 2 days that he waited for the outcome, while Greg Byrne did test positive and was symptomatic.
Yes. I was just concerned because I know they dealt with each other some kind of way, and how did he...
Well, yeah, Stanley, that's hard to describe. They did come in some contact, but you can be with someone with COVID and get it or not get it. I'm not smart enough to describe what it takes to get it. You're supposed to have had extensive contact, but I'm not sure that's all that it takes. But I appreciate the question. It's a good one. We are heading to a break. We have 3 hours to go, and we hope that you will stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.